Coming up next, we've got a young lady joining us by phone. Her name is Mary Fall. And if you grew up or came of age in the 1990s, you might remember a group called the October Project. She was the original lead singer of that group. She's got several albums out under her own name. We're going to play some cuts from all of that in just a few minutes. She's performing this Saturday at the Acorn Theater. We were just talking about the Acorn at 107 Generations Drive in Three Oaks, Michigan. And don't let the Michigan address throw you, because it's only about an hour from where we're sitting right now. Great venue. And a great young lady that you're going to get to meet in just a few minutes. Let's go back to 1993 and the album that turned me on to her. I was working at Woodmar Records at the time, and this album came out, October Project. And this was the single that I remember being all over MTV and all over the internet at the time. The early internet wasn't quite what it is today. This is Barry, My Lovely. It's a little gothy, but it's good stuff. We'll talk to her after this. Barry, My Lovely, going back to the early 90s, 1993, if I remember correctly. I was working at Woodmar Records, and Yeah, we would always get to sample all the new artists that came out. And there's two voices that I think of when I hear of the 1990s and that era of my rock experience. And that is, Mary Fall, who is just singing there with October Project, who is joining us momentarily. And also the late, great Dolores O'Riordan of the Cranberries. Two of the greatest voices of that decade, in my opinion. And sadly, Dolores left us last year. But Mary is still out there performing, and she's coming right to the area here in the Midwest. In fact, she's in the Midwest in Wisconsin today. But this Saturday, she will be at one of our favorite venues here, the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan, singing songs from her many albums. She's got several solo albums out. And Mary, are you there?
I am. Hi, Tom.
Hello. I'm glad we were able to make this happen. You and I just kind of connected about a day or two ago, and I wasn't aware of the show. It kind of slipped by me, but I'm glad that we did connect, and I've had a chance to revisit your music. It's been a little while since I was able to dig into it. And what do you think of when you hear that song, Bury My Lovely? That was a big one for October Project.
Oh, well, that was the song that really broke us on radio, you know. It was our first hit, basically. So I remember the first time we ever heard it played, and I think it was on WXPN in Philadelphia. And, you know, that's that moment in life you can't replace, mm-hmm. you know. And it was a very exciting time, and we got to make a video of it and everything. And I just think of those times, and it was so exciting to be a young band and, you know, on our first label. And, you know, it's so funny because it was so long ago. I think to myself, I don't listen to October Project very often. I just, you know, I mean, I kind of just don't, you know, but mm-hmm. When I hear it again, I just think, you know, we did a good job, you know, I just think, you know, nice job, guys.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
The band with the original incarnation didn't last very long though. What happened with that? And then we'll move on to what you've done since.
Sure. I mean, we were signed to Epic in the end of 1992, put the record out in 93, and then we did another record in 95 and broke up it basically in 96, at the end of 96. And our first album did very well. That was the one that had Bury My Lovely as a single. And I guess in retrospect, when the second record came out, Falling Farther In, Sony, the folks at radio at Sony didn't feel that we had a hit on that record. And as you know, on a major label,
mm-hmm.
that is so important. And so basically they put the record out and it just didn't sell as well. And they dropped us basically. And that was that. And I didn't see any reason at that point to continue on and try to go to another label or, you know, I felt that I had done what I could do with that band and that in order to grow creatively, I needed to go off on my own. I didn't want to sing October Project songs for the rest of my life and nothing but October Project songs. So, and I'm glad I made that decision. I know it was the right decision to make. And so I went off on my own and I learned how to write songs. I was never allowed to write for October Project. It was, and I was told I would never be allowed to write. No matter what.
Wow, so, that's harsh.
No, really. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I was told in no uncertain terms, you will never write for this band, ever. So I thought, well, I wanted to grow and stretch myself. So I went and I ended up working, first of all, with a great guy named Bob Riley from a band called Gracepool. Do you remember Gracepool?
I that do was another remember
90s.
That. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So Bob had a studio in New York, and I would go up and work with him every week. And he was such a sweet guy and gave me a lot of confidence that I could really do this. And so I began to write with him, co-write, and we wrote a couple of songs. And we did a couple of demos, kept trying, and also wrote with Ramsey McLean, who did all the lyrics for the early Harry Connick records. And Ramsey and I wrote some songs, and it took me a while to get confident, but once I did, and once I felt that I had a handful of songs that I felt were good, you know, good, and not just good, but really good.
Mm-hmm.
Because October Project, you know, those were wonderful songs, and so, you know, that's a high bar, that they put up. So I didn't want to just sing my own stuff for the sake of doing it. They had to be songs that I felt were worthy. So once I had that, I put my own band together, handpicked some people, and I was doing a lot of television commercials at the time, singing television commercials and stuff. So I was doing all right financially, and I was able to afford to hire a band of really good people. And coincidentally, several of the members of the band that I toured with, I started taking my stuff out and touring it, became the band called Olabel, if you know Olabel.
I am not familiar with them.
They got subsequently got signed to Columbia and did a record for them, and then did another record. I think it was for Verve. I'm actually not sure what the label was. But in any case, they're fantastic. Amy Helm was their lead singer. And in any case, I started touring, and I ran into a producer who had been one of the people that was suggested for October Project's first record. That was Jeffrey Lesser. And I ran into him at doing a commercial, and he was producing it and engineering it. And he said, "Well, what have you been doing lately?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm trying to shop around and I'm writing." And he said, "Well, let me hear what you've done." So he said, "You know, these demos aren't good enough, Mary. I could do a better job for you. I know I could." And I love Jeffrey and I believed him. And so I said, "Okay, let's do it then." And we made a demo. And that was my first EP, and I actually released it as just to see if I still had an audience out there that would buy a record from me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't actually think, Tom, that I'd get another deal. In my heart, I thought, you know, I'm 40 years old. Come on. You know, I know how this business is. But I thought, well, if that's the case, I'm still going to do what I do, and I'm going to tour. And because I didn't think I'd get another deal, I thought, so I don't have to be commercial. So I'm going to just do what I love. So I started incorporating some medieval music and maybe a little classical, not the whole show,
mm-hmm.
but just peppering my show with that kind of stuff, things I love. And lo and behold, one of these sort of classical crossover labels started coming to my shows and talking to me. And I wasn't thrilled with what they had in mind for me. But in the meantime, Sony Classical got wind that this other label was interested, and they called me immediately and made arrangements for me to come up to the big Sony building in New York to audition for them. And interestingly enough, they were not really aware of October Project. They just heard I was, you know, doing some interesting stuff. And so I ended up auditioning for them a week after 9/11.
Wow.
Kind of, there's so many emotions going on with that.
And you're a native New Yorker. That's something we need to stress to the listeners.
Exactly. And so there I found myself a week later, and I'm up at the top of the Sony building looking out over the panorama of New York City. And they had asked me to do some of my own material, and I had to hire a pianist in a couple of days because my band, because all the planes were down, I couldn't bring any musicians that I knew with me because they couldn't get back into New York. They had been touring. So I had to hire somebody I barely knew. But I played some of my own stuff, and then I played Ben Indi Habibi, which is a song from 11th century Spain and one that I had been performing. And then they had asked me to sing an aria, and I explained to them that, you know, I'm not a classical singer. I mean, I'm not Renee Fleming. I'm not even a soprano. I was like, guys, you know, I'm not even a contralto. I'm more like a tenor. And they said, well, we'd like you to do it anyway. And I remember saying to them, well, you mean like, you want me to sing something like Nessun Dorma, which is a very famous aria. And they said, do you know it? I said, yes, I do. Because as I've often told the story in shows, because years and years before, Tom, when I was just out of college, and I did not study music. I went to McGill in Montreal. I didn't study music. I actually studied medieval history and literature. And so after college, I found myself in a very horrible, wretched apartment in Brooklyn, getting fired from one waitressing job after another, what with my medieval studies degree. And so I would come home to this horrible apartment, and my air conditioning broke that summer. And I couldn't afford to get it fixed. It was just wretched. And so to get my mind off this situation, I decided that I would learn every Pavarotti aria there was, because those songs really transported me. I mean, I love a lot of the classical repertoire for female singers, but they didn't sit in my voice as well, obviously. So I used to fill up this tub with sort of cool water, and I'd get in when I got home from work, and I would open up the little waterlogged booklet with all the Pavarotti translations and everything, and I began to learn all the Puccini and Verdi and all of that stuff, never thinking in a million years that I would ever sing it for anybody or that anyone would ever be interested in hearing me sing it. But I learned them all, and over the years I would, you know, once you learn something in a foreign language, you never forget it. It's I don't know why, I think it's lodged in another part of your memory bank in your brain. But so I just knew those songs by heart. And so when they asked me to sing that, I thought, oh, sure. And something about that particular song brings me to such a beautiful place that I wasn't even nervous singing in front of them. I was extremely calm, which is rare when you're singing in front of corporate types. That's a really awkward way to perform. You know, it's an awkward situation. But I didn't feel that way at all. I think this tremendous calm came over me, and I sang Nessun Dorma for them. And Peter Gelb was the president of Sony Classical at the time. He's now the head of the Metropolitan Opera, and he's been doing marvelous things with the Met. He's the one that brought all of that sort of bringing the Met to movie theaters, you know, which has been very, very successful. So he's just a great guy, very innovative, lovely, lovely man. So I remember after I sang, he sort of waved me over to where they were sitting in the room, and he said, "Mary, we'd really like you on this label. What do you think about that?" And I was stunned, you know. I mean, what do you say to that?
Wow.
And so I ended up making a record for Sony Classical, which I never would have dreamed that I would be on a classical label, but there you have it. And they wanted me to make a record that was cinematic. They wanted me to write for movies, which I did. I wrote the theme song for Gods and Generals and some a song for a film called The Guys. And then they wanted me to sing with an orchestra, and they wanted me to sing an aria. Those were my directions. And so that's what I did. I do think that it kind of confused radio when it came out, because I think people were expecting a third October Project record. And that's not what this was, you know, and it wasn't intended to be that way, you know. I had a marvelous time doing that. I got to sing with an orchestra, which is, there's nothing more sublime than that for a singer. It was really a stunning experience. And then after that, Peter left, and everybody that I knew at Sony Classical was gone. Just the BMG took it over.
That happens so often. That happens so often.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my last days there, it was they were giving away Sony audio equipment. They're like, "Here, Barry, you want this? You want this speaker? You want this turntable?" it was like a rummage sale. And
wow.
It was like there was tumbleweed flowing down the hallways there. So that's
crazy.
You know, and I know that that's the record business. And so subsequent to that, then I, you know, kind of got bummed out for a while. And then, you know, you wash your face and you dry your tears and you get back out there. And I ended up doing an album for V2 Records, which was my interpretation of Dark Side of the Moon, which was really fun to do.
I remember
and,
that. Before we get into that, let's go back and play Nessun from the live album.
Oh, Nessun Dorma.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, from the Live at the Mock Chuck Opera House record.
So
yes.
We have that, and we're going to play that right now. This is this is off the second disc, if you will, of this album. And let's play it, and we'll be back with Mary Fall after this.
Nessun dorma, nessun dorma, tu pure io principessa nella tua fredda stanza, guardi
Mary Fall live, Nessa Dorma. Great stuff. Definitely different than October Project.
Yes, very different.
Now, how much of that style are you still incorporating in the live show, like the one you're bringing here to the Acorn? And are you still doing October Project, focusing just on your albums?
I always do some October Project songs. And, certainly people will request them. You know, they'll write to me and say, please, you know, sing Ariel or something. So I always do that because that's part of my history, mm-hmm. And so there's a few of them that I still love and I sing to this day. I sing Deep As You Go from Falling Farther In. And so I'll do that. I do my own songs. You know, I've made a couple of records since then, Love and Gravity. Yeah. And yes, I still do Ben Ayn Dee Habibi from my Sony Classical record, which is that Andalusian song, and I sing some classical music. So I like to take people on a pretty broad musical journey, and that's what I'll be doing at the Acorn Theater.
Okay, now you have released, to my count, about 5 solo albums, correct?
I'm trying to think in my head.
If you count the EP that you did.
Yes. Okay. So the EP and then Love and Gravity and Live at the Mock Chunk Opera House and, the Other Side of Time and then also A Dark Side of the Moon.
Right. Right. Love and Gravity is your last studio album, correct?
Yes. Studio album that was produced by John Lithgow. Yeah.
And that was in 14. Is that right?
Yeah. Right.
So
around
you're overdue, yeah. Dear.
Well, I just finished a record.
Oh, okay. Are you?
But we're still mixing it. So it's just all my vocals are done. You know, all the tracks are recorded. So it's basically just I've been on the road almost nonstop the past couple of weeks. So when I get back, we're just going to put the finishing touches on and then we'll see.
Now you worked with John again on Love and Gravity,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
and he had worked very famously with Leonard Cohen.
Oh yeah, for years. In fact, he produced the famous version of Leonard Cohen singing Hallelujah.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Wow. What was it like working with him on this last album, having that kind of pedigree that he came with? And of course, you've got a little history there with him.
Yes. Yeah. I first met John when he did all the orchestrations for my Sony Classical record. Mm-hmm. And we just hit it off completely. John and I just resonate beautifully with each other. And so when it came time to do a solo record, a real studio album, John doesn't live that far from me. So it was very, it just worked out on so many levels. And he has his own studio. And John and I do some writing together as well. So I knew John, he's very cinematic in the way that he works, and so am I. And he has his own studio, and because he's done so much work in movies, which a lot of people don't know that's what he does, but mm-hmm. that he does, it's kind of one-stop shopping working with him. And on that Love and Gravity record, interestingly enough, I ended up writing a song for the audiobook version of an Anne Rice novel.
Oh, The Exiles.
Yes, and that, if I could tell you very briefly how that came about, she had written me a letter. Anne Rice wrote me a letter out of the blue a couple of years ago, and she didn't realize that back in the day when October Project was on Sony, you know, we were getting some stuff into movies,
mm-hmm.
but we really wanted to get a song into the film version of Interview with the Vampire. And it would have been appropriate because our music was sort of quasi-goth. It would have been appropriate, but we didn't have quite the star power at that point that Guns N' Roses had. So they got the gig and we didn't. But she
a mistake. That was a mistake in hindsight.
Well, anyway, but she discovered someone must have told her this. And so it was a Sunday and she spent this entire Sunday posting on her Facebook page every video we ever made and anything I had ever done. And she wrote me this really beautiful letter. And so we just started up sort of an email friendship. You know, she lives in California now. She's not in New Orleans any longer. Mm-hmm. And so when I had basically finished Love and Gravity, and I knew she was going to be in New York, And I wrote to her and I said, hey, do you want a copy of the album? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. So I sent a friend of mine over to bring it to Anne's hotel room. And so my friend brings it up to her and says, here. And she said, oh, well, here, I want to give you something to give to Mary. And so she hands to my friend a galley of a book she has coming out. And the book was called The Wolves of Midwinter. And, she, you know, she inscribed it to me. And as my friend is leaving, she goes, tell Mary she's in the book.
Wow.
Oh, my God. What? So it ends up being that the lead character in the novel is haunted by this ghost who, I guess, and every time the ghost is there, the ghost is my voice singing. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's in the book. And then her next book, she ended up actually dedicating to me, it's dedicated to me and John Bon Jovi, which is probably the only time my name will ever be next to his.
I was going to say that's another odd pairing there.
It's a very odd pairing, but she said we were her muses. But in any case, so as my friend turned around and said to Anne, "Well, heck, why doesn't Mary write a song for the audiobook version of this?" And Anne said, "Well, gosh, you think she would?" My friend is like, don't worry, I'll get her to do it. And so my friend called me from the road and she said, "Let's see, you're going to do it. And Random House is all on board and everything else." And I said, "Well, whoa, 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 how much time do I have?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, well, you have about a week." So I was like, oh my God. And you know better than any probably how long it takes to actually write. But I said, oh my God. But I went to work and I called John and I said, "John, you're my co-writer on this." And so I read the book. And I wrote a bunch of lyrics, and I went up to him, and I said, and what I love about the way he works is that I gave him an emotional roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "John, the beginning of the song, I want big drums, like boom, because it takes place in the middle of the forest. And then I want you to, you know, sort of have something that sounds very minor key-ish, but then I want you to jump off and take the song somewhere where it's like you're leaping into the air." And that's exactly, you can give him visual cues like that, and he will come up with a melody. So we wrote that song in one day.
Wow.
And
now, did you have to give her a finished demo?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And it was due. I mean, due, like finished, like mixed, mastered, finished. And I don't know how we did it, but it was like sliding into home base. But we got it under the door, and we did it, and it went on. And that was that. And it was, I really like that song, too.
Well, let's play it.
Yeah.
Is this the version that you sent her then? Is this a re-recorded version?
Well, the one on Love and Gravity is the studio version, which
okay.
I really like. That's the one.
Okay. Well, let's play that now. We'll be back with Mary on the other side and talk about what's coming up next.
When shadows fall and the fires burn, the forest calls to me that I must return. The night becomes primordial, it murmurs and it howls, it draws. the hunger comes and I lose control. Hold me in the darkness, bless my tarnished soul. I will run beside you, we'll leave the past behind. We'll hide inside the ages, beneath the sands of time. You
is spooky. The Wolves of Midwinter, Exiles. That's off Love and Gravity. It's the latest studio album from my guest, Mary Fall. Many know her from her time with October Project in the 90s, but she's done so much more since then, and we're going to get to a couple more songs before we say goodbye. But these are songs that you will be hearing this Saturday at the Acorn Theater, 107 Generations Drive in Three Oaks, Michigan, and that's only about an hour from where we're sitting here, so don't let the Michigan address throw you. She's close to Chicago, close to Northwest Indiana, because Acorn is a beautiful place to see a show. Great acoustics. Evan does a great job on the sound over there. And Mary, you've played there before, correct?
Yes, I was there last year. It's a great space, and I love that whole neighborhood in Three Oaks. They've done just such a nice job restoring that whole area, so you can go and get a bite to eat and have some drinks, and it's a nice Saturday night out.
Yeah, it's kind of a small town Americana thing, but they've got so much going on. It's not so rural.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's a beautiful part of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And this is the great time of year to go there.
Yep.
Your sound in a little bit reminds me of a friend of mine named Candace Knight. Are you familiar with Blackmore's Knight?
No.
They are, when you mentioned the medieval stuff, Ritchie Blackmore from Deep Purple left the heavy stuff behind and started embracing the medieval sounds, and they do the whole Renaissance style of music. And as I was listening to that, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the style of music they do. It might be something you want to look into. They are native New Yorkers now, too.
Well, what is their name again?
It's Blackmore's Knight.
Blackmore's Knight.
And the singer is Candace Knight.
Candace Knight. Okay.
Yeah, she's...
Oh, I'll definitely look that up. That sounds like it's right up my alley.
I think you would totally enjoy it, and I think you guys would be perfect tour mates. I really do. I think this would be an amazing show to see the two groups together. That said, with this show at the Acorn, are you performing solo? Is it you and a guitar, you and a keyboard? Are you bringing a band?
Nope, it's just me and my guitars. I bring two guitars with me, and my electric sound is very ambient. So I like to sort of have that ambient guitar sound around my vocals. And when I play the Northeast, I can bring a band with me. So I often do big band shows there, like at the Mock Chunk Opera House. But when I'm here, it's just me. But I do a very intimate show when it's a solo show. So I tell a lot of stories, and it's just a sort of more intimacy.
Okay. And again, that show is Saturday. It's an 8 p.m. Eastern time. So for those of you that are here in Northwest Indiana or Chicago listening, that is 7 p.m. our time. Keep in mind there's an hour difference, so travel accordingly. You were mentioning a new album coming out that you are getting ready to mix it down. Tell us a little bit about that. Do you have a working title or anything?
Yes, I do. It's called Amor Amore, and it's love in French and love in Italian. And this has been a project that I've wanted to do for 30 years. And John Lissauer just said, Mary, you've got to do it. And the older you get, the more you realize you have to get some things done just in case.
Right.
And so it's a double record, and one album is all Italian, and one album is all in French. Obviously, this is not a pop record, but I mentioned earlier that I've always loved classical music, and so the way that I do these songs is I call it sort of an ambient folk classical record. The Italian songs are Italian arias and art songs, but then the other album is all French. So it's all Debussy and Fauré and Ravel and Poulenc. And I love French music from that period, the Impressionist period. And it's like, it's the music that feeds my soul. You know what I mean? And so I feel like, I just have been feeling like somebody needed to do those songs in a less stuffy, recital-y kind of way. Because every time you go on YouTube and you see these beautiful songs performed, it's always some soprano looking really uncomfortable in a glitzy dress with her hands on a piano. And
right.
I just thought, no. A lot of these songs are based on folk melodies, and I felt like I could bring something really unique and different to them. And so I've spent the latter part of the winter finishing up all of the French music, and basically we're done. And I never say this about myself, but I think this is, for me, was the most challenging work and the most rewarding work, and I think maybe some of the best work I've ever done in my life.
Wow, that's saying a lot.
I just feel like a lot of music these days doesn't feed your soul the way it should, but I feel like these songs are so beautifully written that they do. And So God knows where it'll go out there in the real world. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know.
Now, have you taken?
I mean,
have you taken creative licensing with the lyrics? Have you added some of your own touches to it, as you did with, say, Dawning of the Day?
No. Okay. I mean, we certainly, in terms of arrangement, we certainly took a great deal of license.
Okay.
But in terms of the lyrics, no. I mean, some of these lyrics were written by some great poets, especially the French music. So I would never do so. That would be sort of sacrilege, you know what I mean? But
okay.
It would be. So no, I didn't do that, but definitely with the arrangements. They are all very unique and different from the original.
This is not like a bombastic orchestral style that we normally hear. This is a stripped-down folk style.
No, in fact, it's much more intimate than that. And I think there's more of an immediacy to it. And everybody I've played this for, but again, I don't, it's an obscure niche, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who would listen, but you got to do what you love for the sheer love of doing it. It was just something I had to do. And, so we'll see where it goes. And,
what's the release date?
What's
the release date?
I don't know yet. And that's actually something I'm thinking about. And thinking maybe, I still have to get the artwork together and all that. Maybe early fall.
Okay.
Maybe.
Are you self-releasing or you get a label?
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. You never know. So that's why I'm getting myself a little. We still have some finishing touches to do on it and everything. So we'll see.
Are you able to road test any of these in your present format with you and a guitar?
I am road testing them as, now. I mean, obviously, I don't do an entire show of nothing but classical music. So, again, I'm going to be doing October Project, and I love to do covers as well, including, in fact, on Love and Gravity,
Judy Collins.
I recorded a version of, which I grew up with that song, and it reminds me of my early childhood and growing up with my family. And I love Judy Collins and I love Joni Mitchell. So I recorded both sides now. And I'll be doing that song tonight.
Okay. Well, let's play that. Again, that's off Love and Gravity, and we'll be back a final time with Mary. This is Both Sides Now, as you've not quite heard it before. It's her own take.
Bows and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I recall. I really don't. The dizzy, dancey way you feel when every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show. You'll leave 'em laughing when you go. If you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, and still somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't. Fears and feeling proud to say I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds, I've looked at life that way, but now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads, they say I've changed. Well, something's lost, but something's gained in living every day.
Those drums again. Love that drum sound on this album. Both Sides Now, Judy Collins made it famous, of course, first. So many people have covered it, but you certainly have your fingerprints all over that, Mary. Mary Fall is my guest, and she'll be performing at the Acorn Theater this Saturday. That's tomorrow. Oh, my goodness. It's right upon us.
Yeah.
You mentioned that Judy was an influence. Let's go back to the early days real quick. What got you into music? When did you know this was your calling?
You know, when I was a little kid, I just always sang. That's what I did. And I guess, through high school, you know, I used to perform in plays and things like that because I could sing, obviously, and they'd have musicals and everything. And I guess it was when I got out of college, I was working at different jobs. And I don't know why I didn't pursue it right away. I guess I just, you know, thought I needed to get do something, you know, sort of more serious, quote unquote. And then at one point, a friend of mine said, Mary, you have to sing. This is what you're here to do. And I just started going out and singing out live. And I had sung a bit through college when I was up in Montreal, but nothing, you know, really serious or mm-hmm. professional, really. And then I was working at a job, and I ran into and met Julie Flanders who through a friend. We met on Fifth Avenue in New York, and I remember she invited me to her birthday party, which was, I guess, 2 days later, and we became friends. And she was working in the city, you know, out of college and, you know, not really doing what she wanted to do, which was be a songwriter. And then we started working together, and she said, you should meet my boyfriend, Emil. He's a songwriter. And I went out to Montclair, New Jersey, where he had a little studio. And I remember he played me some of their songs. And I have to tell you, Tom, this rarely happens in life, but I listened and I started singing along with them. And I knew the minute I heard those songs that we were going to have a band and that I knew we'd get a deal. I knew it. I knew that the combination of all of our talents would work together. It just would. And so we started small. It was just Emil and Dave, the guitar player, and myself. And then a year later, we added Marina. And that really filled out our whole sound. And we hired a percussionist and started playing around New York City. And we fell into that scene at Cafe Chenet, which became very famous through Jeff Buckley.
Right.
But at the time, I mean, we used to play there often the same. Jeff Buckley would go on after us many, many nights. And it was a tiny little hole-in-the-wall coffee house. And but a lot of record labels were coming down there to find talent. And we played there over and over and over again. And that's basically how we came to the attention of Epic Records. And, you know, we got a lot of people got deals out of there.
Right.
So, yeah.
You have a very folk sound, but a lot of people, because of the era, perhaps, labeled you as goth, and you yourself even said kind of a quasi-goth sound. How do you take that label? Because I don't see it. I don't hear it really.
Well, I think it was October Project had a sort of, you know, we were described as chamber pop, you know, sort of quasi-goth.
Okay, chamber pop. Yeah, I like that. That describes you.
It sounded like, I think chamber pop was one of the music writers described us that way. And I think that's pretty appropriate because it sort of has soaring melodies, I think very solidly written melodies. And again, we had soaring harmonies and things like that. So, and vaguely kind of classical sort of sound to it. Some people have remarked that it reminded them of Renaissance a little bit, although they sounded way more classical than we ever did.
Oh, Annie Halsum and company?
Annie Haslam, yeah.
Okay.
And it's interesting because Annie doesn't live far from me, and she actually invited me to sing with her on a show last year, which was really fun to do because I was a huge Renaissance fan when I was in high school. But you asked me earlier about growing up, and, you know, I grew up in the 60s, and I had siblings that were much older than me. I was sort of at the tail end of a very big family.
Mm-hmm.
So we had all of the great music of the 60s playing, you know, in our house on the giant console in our living room. And, you know, my oldest brother was the folkie, so he had all the Judy Collins and Bob Dylan and Peter, Paul, and Mary. And then my sister had all the great female singers of the 60s, and my other brother was the prog guy. So we find October Project had an interesting little, you know, niches of fans. We had some metalheads that liked us. We had some goth people that liked us. We had, you know, people that just liked female singer-songwriter type of thing. We certainly opened for Sarah McLachlan for quite a while, and that really helped to put us on the map. That was a good pairing for us.
Definitely.
And then we had, you know, so it was, we had sort of different pockets in our fan base.
Okay. Who is your following now? I mean, you're all over the board. Now you're doing foreign language albums.
I don't know. It's certainly old October Project fans come out to the show. And then I have a pocket of fans that are just fans of what I did with Gods and Generals.
Okay.
So people that went to see that movie, you'd be surprised the number of Civil War reenactors that come to my show because they were all in that movie. And so they love that song. And that's how they discovered me. And then there are people that just, you know, found me out of the blue, you know, on Pandora or, you know, and things like that. And I really try to do a show that will bring people back. People come to the shows over and over again, and they bring new people with them, you know. So I've just been developing a new audience just from the records that I've put out. So it's really those kind of three pockets.
You've got a show coming up that I do want to just touch on briefly because we are running tight, but you're being part of the Bob Dylan birthday party. How did that come about? That's a very cool show.
I've done a couple of tribute shows this year at City Winery, and one was for George Harrison, which was really fun for me to do. And I did the Joni Mitchell tribute earlier in this year. I guess everybody's turning 75. So, and so the same people that were involved in those tributes asked me to come on and do the Dylan tribute. So I've been going around and around in my head. What am I going to do? You know, there's so much to choose from, but, you know, I think I know what I want to do.
All right. And that is May 22nd in New York for
those
that might be listening.
Yeah, New York City. It's City Winery. Yeah.
Wow. It was just about time to go. I do want to play one more song and have you kind of explain it real quick. And that is, we're going to go back to the live version of it. But you mentioned the Pink Floyd covers album that you had done.
Yes.
And I've got Us and Them from the Live Opera House album queued up.
Yeah.
What prompted that particular album, From the Dark Side of the Moon?
My husband is sort of whispering in my ear here. This was after City Classical, and I this was a labor of love. I didn't have a deal at the time, and I just felt that Dark Side of the Moon had a really powerful message, and I'd always loved it as a kid. And I felt that I could bring something unique to it, and I felt it spoke to our time. You know, this sort of spoke to our time now more than it did when it came out.
Okay.
And my husband is looking and saying, you should do Brain Damage. He likes that one better.
Oh, you want to do that? We can do that.
Yeah, do Brain Damage.
All right.
That one we can do. Okay.
All right. Well, Mary, we're going to close with that and let you go. Good luck and safe travels from Wisconsin to Michigan, and break a leg.
Thank you, Tom. This has been really delightful.
Thank you much.
Bye-bye.
Let's go back to the live album now. This is Brain Damage and Mary's treatment of it.
Is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass, remembering games and daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. Lunatics are in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. Your headache starts with dark forebodings too. You love